The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
As your children, your grandchildren, your godchildren head off to college, be sure to tell them about LCMSU. It's an initiative connecting and supporting Lutheran students as they face countless challenges to their biblical worldview, as they will at college and university, to their doctrine, ethics, and to their practice that you've spent so many years teaching them. Find out more about LCMSU at lcms.org/LCMSU. That's lcms.org/LCMSU. With the recent Supreme Court decision of Hellerstedt, you might think that the door's been shut on pro-life efforts nationally. You might, if you were pro-life, say, well, maybe it is time, finally, after so many years, so many decades, to throw in the towel. Is that true? Why is it that a state-by-state strategy now might be the best long-term way of combating abortion and eventually getting to Roe v. Wade itself? Joining us to answer that question and talk about abortion legislation after the Supreme Court's recent Hellerstedt decision, Clark Forsythe. He's acting president of Americans United for Life and author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Four Ways State Lawmakers Can Keep Fighting Abortion. Clark, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Review for us what the whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt decision was really all about. And should pro-lifers after it throw in the towel?
It involved Texas regulations on abortion, limits on abortion clinics. It involved clinic regulations, general health and safety regulations, and the requirement of admitting privileges that abortion providers be able to admit patients who might have complications after abortion at a local hospital. And the court, five justices, a bare majority, threw out the higher standard of care, but implicitly approved a lower standard of care. And the answer to your question is absolutely not. The decision means that, well, first of all, it leaves open a whole range of pro-life laws that the states can and should enact. And even in the area of health and safety regulations, it leaves open a whole range of health and safety regulations that the states should consider and adopt.
Why is battling this in the states a good long-term strategy for the pro-life community?
Because our federalist system, a Congress, one federal government and 50 state governments, the option of the 50 states opens up a whole range of political and legislative options that other states, other countries don't have. I mean, look at England, parliamentary system. If you can't get something through parliament, there are no states to go to. Canada, same way. And the pro-life movements in England and Canada are rather moribund compared to the activity and the vigor of the pro-life movement in the United States. And it's largely because we've got 50 states we can go to.
What about first trimester regulations? Why is that something that the states can continue, pro-life movement in the states can continue to work on?
Well, with all the media coverage of the Supreme Court decision, the Texas decision, Hellerstedt, since June 27th, I think that very few people in America even know that the court in Roe versus Wade back in 73 had completely prohibited the states from enacting any health and safety regulations in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks of pregnancy, when 90% of abortions are done. And the Supreme Court didn't admit that they were overturning that, or that for the very first time since 73, they were approving health and safety regulations in the first trimester, but that's in fact what they did. They implicitly approved at least a lower standard of care, enforcement of clinic regulations, inspections of clinics. In the case of Kermit Gosnell, that clinic had not been inspected for years, if not a whole decade. So the court implicitly approved those, and the state should move ahead with those.
You talk about the public health vacuum in abortion clinics. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's been the 43 years since Roe versus Wade, in which the court prohibited health and safety regulations, and the states tried to move ahead, first with comprehensive regulations and then kind of piecemeal, in the face of hostility of federal judges and the hostility of the Supreme Court. And only in the past several years have states been able to move ahead with some kind of clinic regulations. And the court's position Roe versus Wade created that public health vacuum. No regulations, no health and safety regulations until very recently. So, the Kermit, the ultimate authority responsible for the Kermit Gosnell scandal in Philadelphia and others around the country are the justices.
What kind of information, you say bad information, did the Hellerstadt court operate with that needs to be corrected at the state level?
Well, the justices, when they struck down the higher standard of care for women in abortion clinics, they cherry-picked the data. They picked the data in the case that was offered by abortion providers themselves and refused to look at a mountain of data showing that abortion has short-term complications, hemorrhage, among others, infection, that abortion is not safer than childbirth, and that there's a vast body, a growing body of international medical studies finding increased risk of preterm birth after abortion, increased risk of mental trauma after abortion, increased risk of breast cancer after abortion. And the court never even mentioned the existence of that body of data.
How do you respond to someone who says, look, you can make all these regulations on the safety of abortion that you want to? You'd mentioned Kermit Gosnell before. But bad people like Gosnell, they're always going to find a way around the law. How do you respond to that objection?
Well, it's absurd. And unfortunately, Justice Breyer, in his opinion for the court in the Texas case, said exactly that. It is flawed in so many ways. I mean, can you imagine the Supreme Court saying that with respect to gun regulations? But in the case of abortion clinics, standards are needed to prevent bad situations and to establish a standard by which the Kermit Gosnells can be prosecuted and convicted. But if you don't have preventive standards ahead of time, then the only thing that women are left with is the burden of going into court and finding a lawyer, paying a lawyer, and going into court with some kind of malpractice case after the fact. And medical malpractice actions are extremely expensive and almost prohibitive unless you've got very, very life-threatening injuries or long-term health damage. So you need preventive standards, and that's what the states can do. The justices can't do that. Only the states can step in.
Is there any dearth of information accumulating data on what the long-term effects of abortion is to the health of women who have them?
Well, we don't have a perfect system, especially in the United States. I mean, there's better data in many foreign countries than there is in the United States. I mean, for example, that the increased risk of preterm birth, meaning having a premature delivery, preemie babies after an induced abortion, that data is mostly from international foreign countries. It includes data on women from 30 different countries. I mean, that clearly shows it's not an accident. But in the United States, most people don't know that we have no federal law requiring that abortion providers report data, public health data, and even the number of abortions. We never have since Roe versus Wade. There are two sources of national data. There's the Centers for Disease Control, but reporting data to them is completely voluntary. And there's the pro-abortion Ellen Guttmacher Institute, and reporting data to them is completely voluntary. So we don't, I mean, you always hear bandied about that annual figure of 1.3 million abortions, 1.1 or 1.0, whatever it is. That's just an estimate. So we don't even have an accurate figure on the annual number of abortions in the United States. And if you don't have that, you can't know what the complication rate is for women, and therefore women can't have fully informed consent.
Can we anticipate that such state laws that would highlight the dangers to women, that would attempt to set in standards for abortion that would protect women further, are going to be challenged all the way to the Supreme Court, perhaps even good information forced into the hands of the justices there?
Well, we have called for a national abortion data reporting law passed by Congress that would apply to providers across the country. That's not going to happen anytime soon, because President Obama wouldn't sign such a law. So that means that the states are going to have to work piecemeal, state by state, in upgrading their reporting requirements so we have some accurate public health data on abortion. I think that the issue may return to the Supreme Court, but it may be years before the issue returns to the Supreme Court, because, as you know, before this Hellerstadt decision in June 2016, the court hadn't looked at an abortion case since 2007. So that's 9 years. And the court can just refuse to look at the issue. So it may be decided by the November election, and the future of the Supreme Court and who's appointed to the Supreme Court. We'll have to see. I'm not optimistic that the court's going to revisit the issue soon.
Clark Forsyth is acting president of Americans United for Life, an author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Four Ways State Lawmakers Can Keep Fighting Abortion. You can read it and find out more about Americans United for Life under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Clark, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Todd, very much.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll visit with the producer of those Planned Parenthood undercover videos, David DeLeiden. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.